You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Are you or is anyone you know suffering from the horrific effects of trauma? If so, the Little Book of Affirmations, Claim Your Narrative Over Trauma, can help you. This short ebook is a self-help tool to help you get started on the path of healing from the impacts of trauma. It is important to know that trauma is not an event. It is how your body responds to an event. School shootings, police shootings, the death of a loved one, car accident, all of these events can cause trauma in our bodies. But you can heal from it. I repeat, you can heal from it. So go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble to purchase your ebook today and just in time for the holidays, which is a time when a lot of people are suffering. Give the gift of healing for yourself or for someone you care about. The book was written by a licensed professional counselor who specializes in trauma-informed care. Follow her on Instagram at PLT_LPC and LinkedIn at Patricia Taylor. And I repeat, Instagram at PLT_LPC. And LinkedIn at Patricia Taylor.
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414.
Okay, what are some things that we have had as an experience in terms of building institutions? One, we know that every institution has to have a nucleus, a cadre, a committed core of individuals, a group of brothers and sisters who are welded together toward the development of that institution against all obstacles and against all opposition. You see, these are brothers and sisters who come together regularly to study, to learn, to teach each other, to share experiences, who share similar values, who understand, who have a predictability of behavior, who understand that if one brother goes down this corner and go up that way, he's going to be over there in 10 minutes. See? This is the way this core of brothers and sisters who will develop the institution must feel about each other. So we must have a strong core, a strong nucleus. And if it takes time to develop that core or nucleus, sometimes it's necessary to do that. With our institution, it took us 2 years of struggle in the streets to develop the core of brothers and sisters who would then begin to found our institution. Secondly, every institution has to be committed to quality of service. I think one of the most outrageous things that I've seen about some of our institutions as I've traveled around the country is the way, the low quality of service that we provide for our own people. You see? How can we in any way feel any kind of inspiration or pride about ourselves if we provide a menial quality of service for our own people? As far as running a school, well, we want our students to be not only equal to the black students in the public school, we don't want them just to be equal to the best in the country. You see? In other words, we have to set the highest standards for our service. the highest quality. We must make our institutions the best. That's our goal, to be the best, to be excellent. And we cannot let our goal fall below excellence. As far as I'm concerned, if you don't have a goal of excellence in terms of building an institution, then you shouldn't even get started, because you start on the wrong road already. Thirdly, we have to be concerned about economics. Many of our people, you know, they have a funny feeling about economics. People don't like to have their money ripped off. I went to a meeting, right, about 2 weeks ago, and some of the people were trying to organize against the poverty programs being wiped out. And they couldn't organize the people. And I couldn't understand it, because I had no history of working with them. But I couldn't understand it. So I went outside in the hall, and I asked the sister, I said, well, you know, the programs are going to be wiped out. Why aren't you all down with the organization? She said, the last time we got involved in this, we put in $12,000. Somebody stole the money and went away. You see? That turns people off, right? Your economic records must be impeccable. You have to be able to go and say, here are the records. Here's where your money went. This is what your money was in for. Here's where it went. Here's how it was spent. You have to be economically accountable. Something which has not been...
Listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my sisters and brothers. Habara Ghani. This is the Black Reality Think Tank, and I am your host, William Rogers. We are so happy that you have been able to join us here this evening. We have a very dynamic and wonderful discussion and conversation to have with you as we celebrate the season of Kwanzaa, the principles of Nguzo Saba, and to learn and take that into our communities for empowerment currently. We have for you this evening an example of the principles of Nguzo Saba and how they have been put to use previously by an organization out of Brooklyn, New York. And we want to talk to them tonight. We have a wonderful lineup of individuals that are going to speak with you who are alumni, who are members of the family of this organization of cultural and educational opportunities called the East. And so we are just really excited. So the Black Reality Think Tank is very pleased to have them on tonight as a guest. As all of you know, the Black Reality Think Tank is a historical research network designed to teach, to empower, and provide information relating to the history of African people throughout the world. We use our radio podcast, our website, and other forms of social media as tools to support our mission. Our content and our focus is the journey of our ancestors. Our goals and objectives is to understand the past, dissect the present, and support implementing a meaningful future for generations to come. If you would like to contact us, and I'd love to have you do so, our email is sankofa_think@outlook.com. And I repeat, sankofa_think@outlook.com. We are on every Tuesday night right here on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. We are here at 7 p.m. Central Time. And we would like for you to join us in the future on Tuesday evenings as we talk about those things that will empower our people. So we're going to get right on into our discussion. We have a wonderful young lady who is a member of the family of the East, and she's also an alumni of the East, but she is also a member of the family of the Black Reality Think Tank. And I have enjoyed her over the years. We have been interacting with each other, and she has produced other programs for us, and we just really appreciate her wealth of knowledge and her spirit. And so she is going to co-host for us tonight, and she is going to introduce our panel and our special guest. And so I'm going to turn this right over to her now. Her name is Ms. Boniswa Ayan. So, Mr. Ayan, good evening. How are you? So happy that you are here with us.
Abadi Gani, Dr. Rogers and family. How's everybody?
Their mics are silent for right now, but they do hear you.
Okay, I say. All right. So I'm going to start off with a short version of a libation. And for those who want to call on their ancestors, when it's that time, please feel free to do so. We'll take a minute for that. All praises due to the ancestors. All praises due to the Creator. All praises due to the Son. And the Son's Son. All praises due to the Black man. All praises due to the ancestors. We invoke our ancestors. We call on them by name. We honor our ancestors. We venerate them. We're starting with our ancestors and our family, to those freedom fighters that fought the struggle for liberation for Black people. And I'll ask just for a minute whether we can hear each other or not, to call on our ancestors in unison, starting now. Dorothy Johnson, Benjamin Johnson, Malcolm X, B2A Uzi. Dr. Rogers?
All of the mics are silent, Sister Mia.
Okay. I was just kind of giving people time to, you know, do it. Martin Luther King, Ishaka Musa Barashango, and we give thanks and we say Ashe, Ashe, and Ashe O. Okay, that was our libation. I am Sister Boniswa Ayan, and tonight we have members of the East's family, and the East was an educational and cultural center for black people, which I was very, very, very fortunate to be a part of in my teen years. I'll start by sharing the Ngunzu Saba, today's Ngunzu Saba principle, which is Ujima, collective work and responsibility. And if I were to say anything about the East, that was the core of how it was built, collective work and responsibility. Let's jump on into the program now, because we have a group of people that I'm so excited to hear from. And we want to welcome all to the program. And if you can open the mics now, Doc, I want to call on our panel for this evening and welcome them and make sure everybody's mics and phones are clear. Ashe?
I'm glad you did that beautiful presentation, Sister Benicia. What a beautiful presentation. You use your natural quality of your voice.
Ashe, Ashe. Dr. Rogers? Can you hear me, Dr. Rogers? Maliki, Brother Maliki, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay. All right, well, let's continue on. We see what's going on with Dr. Rogers. So we'll jump on into this conversation. And
I am on.
Welcome. Okay, Ashe. Welcome all. We are so pleased to have you on our program. Starting with Brother Maliki, Akili, Imari, Raphael Jackson, Niambi, Sister Malika Imam, Reggie Workman, myself, Boniswa, and a possible addition somewhere during the program. We'll start with Brother Maliki. Here's our primary question, and we're going to ask everyone to take up to 3 minutes to answer the primary question or to give a primary response, and then we'll let the conversation flow. So starting with Maliki, Brother Maliki, what is your last name, brother, as you introduce yourself?
Maliki Oluwambe.
Ashe. Maliki, Brother Maliki, was one of the co-founders of the East. So my question to all is, what was your involvement in the East nation-building process, and what impact did your experience at the East have on you? That is the question, Brother Maliki.
Okay, well, I want to go into a little bit of the history of the East. And, of course, in the beginning, I was about 14 years old with Hodari Shaka. We all grew up on in Bed-Stuy, Fulton Street, between Ralph and Howard. Brother Hodari took me up to meet Brother G2. It's at a Youth in Action office that was sponsoring a summer program in the summer. And I met G2. And then we went over to Clawson and Fulton, the office of the African American Teachers Association, ATA, which was founded with G2 and Brother Al Van. So at that point, G2 very well understood that if there was going to be any organizing or any change or anything positive in our community, it had to take place with the young people. Mm-hmm. So therefore, he created an organization called ASA, the African American Students Association, and right away we began to organize in all the high schools in New York City. Wingate, Brooklyn Tech, Franklin K. Lane, Rasmus High, every high school in New York City, we begin to organize with some of the concerns of the students in any particular school. But we had a chapter in every high school in New York City. We're very organized. And this is how we started. Next, G2 was then transferred from Junior High School 35 to Ocean Hill-Brownsville, 271. And what was taking place is the Board of Education decided that they was going to let the community have some say in the control of the schools. So as the community had say in control of the school, they took a survey of the teachers and the education that was going on in Ocean Hill, Brownsville, and decided at that point that they were going to get rid of teachers who were not teaching the students well and bring in other teachers. So now G2 is transferred to Junior High School 271 in Ocean Hill because he took some kids to a Malcolm X Memorial with the parents' permission, and they transferred him now to Ocean Hill. The community now brought in Albert Van as the principal, and now they begin to hire other black teachers that would teach these students well. So now community control was taking place. The Board of Ed came in and said, no, wait a minute, we want to take it back. We don't want you all to have control. And so we clearly understood that now we needed to have our own. So with the wisdom and the leadership of Brother G2 Weyusi, we begin to seek out a building, and we found this warehouse on 10 Claver Place in Brooklyn, and we start to clean it out and begin to establish the Institution of the East. And those members who were very involved was Hodari, Raphael, Ife, Nalijah, Sia, Karimba, Jumba, Ian LeVan Zant, okay, the Deborah Nances, the twins, Kwesi, the twins, Imari, and Akili. Many of us were there to clean that building out, and as G2 said, we begin to have those responsibilities that required to keep that building running. Yep. And so whatever it took, whether you need to clean the bathrooms, you need to do security, you needed to set up for the weekend sets of the jazz we had on the weekends. This was what needed to be done, and we did.
My boy, Maliki.
I'm sorry, go right ahead. We had someone else speaking while you were talking.
Yes, that's okay. Yes.
Continue on, Brother Maliki. Everyone will get their turn.
Right, go right ahead, Brother Maliki. Yeah.
So as G2 said, we wanted to function on a level of quality in presenting what we had to the community in terms of the school, in terms of the weekend jazz sets that we had, in terms of lecture series, in terms of the health food store, in terms of the black newspaper we created. We were there to build and show the community what a black organization could do on a quality level in Brooklyn.
Mm. Thank you, Maliki.
That was so powerful.
That's Reggie Workman talking.
Okay, so Brother Reggie Workman, do you want to continue on?
How you doing? I'm inspired by the thing that Maliki remembers. He was a key person in the development of the East, and he's still a key person in keeping the fire burning, moving the torch forward. Of course, I was there too. I was busy with building my career and my family, but the East was a part of my family, so I was involved with everyone else with building and teaching and performing and doing everything that was necessary for the East to happen. Interesting enough, the thing that Maliki has said to us is reminiscent of what's happening today when people are so against us teaching the truth to our students, both white, black, and indifferent, because they don't want the truth to be known about what happened on Black Wall Street. And this is an example of what is going on in politics today, and I'm so glad that we have so many people who are still moving, carrying the torch forward. I'm going to stop because I got so many things that make room for other people.
And for those who don't know, that's Brother Reggie Workman, the renowned bass player, who was also very involved in the community. He also headed up the Muse, which was a cultural organization in Brooklyn that did a lot of things in the community, So that's Brother Reggie Workman, the renowned great master bass player, who also played with John Coltrane.
John Coltrane. Any other artists you played with, my brother?
Oh my God!
Just about anyone you can name. The list is very long. The list is
very long. Mm-hmm. You can give us a few. Just a few.
Oh, well, Freddie Cole, Art Blakey, James Moody, Max Roach, Archie Shepard, Lee Morgan. I mean, I've been in the business for a long time, and I'm very, very, I'm an ardent supporter of music in our culture, and I realize that all of us have to make sure that our children understand where their greatness comes from.
I say. And I don't know if I'm neglected, but if everyone, if I call on your name, if you would introduce yourself first, and then answer the question what your involvement was in the East and what impact did your experience with at the East have on you. So next, thank you, Brother Maliki. Asante Sana, which means thank you, and Asante to Brother Reggie Workman. Next, I'll call on Sister Akili.
Brother Akili.
Okay, so
that's me. Abari Ghani.
And Jim Asante Ghani.
Okay, thank you for this opportunity to speak about an organization that changed our lives. As I say, I wrote a book and I said that it changed boys to men and girls to women. Mm-hmm. I started out at the East as a student in the Uhuru Sasa School, one of the divisions of school. We had a school from preschool all the way up to high school. And I started out as a student there. I was disillusioned by the public school, and my sister and I searched for schools to go to, and we liked the East and ended up at the East. I was at the East for about a year when G2 asked me to be a teacher at the East. I think I was 16 years old. He wanted me to be a teacher. As I spoke to G2 throughout the years, he said he wasn't looking for people with certification, but he was looking for people that could relate to the children, and he felt that I was one of the people that could relate to the children. We taught all the disciplines, math, science. We even taught martial arts. We were instructed and taught how to teach by other teachers there at the school that had credentials. We would have teacher workshops once a week where we learned how to do lesson plans, and we were very successful. Sister Malika was another teacher there. We were very successful. I taught the 3 or 4 year olds and then the 5 and 6 year olds, and the parents were very happy with the education that their children were getting. Later on, as I started getting involved with the jazz club, we had a jazz club that Brother Reggie Workman and a lot of other artists performed at, top jazz artists performed at the East. And I studied under Maliki and Imari and learned how to do sound, which became my career. I've had 12 tours with artists around the world, and I recorded 150 albums, and that was because of the East. The East prepared us all for our futures. And
would you mind naming?
So I'm very thankful for the East.
Could you name some of those artists, please, if you don't mind?
I've worked with Gil Scott-Heron, George Clinton, Prince, James Brown, and Eddie Kendrick, and the list goes on and on and on.
Right.
Asante, brother. It speaks to the excellence that the East produced. Thank you so much. Ari, introduce yourself, please, and talk about your involvement in the East Nation building process. Imari?
Who were you calling, sister?
I don't hear her voice.
Okay. I'll move on and come back. Raphael Jackson?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, you can.
Okay, yes. My name is Raphael Jackson. I had the pleasure of meeting G2. We called him Watusi Less when I was about 10 years old, PS 167 in Brooklyn. And he was a softball teacher. And what happened was, besides being a regular teacher, and the next time I met up with him was during the school strike. And we recognized each other, we hugged, and basically I said, look, whatever you need to be done. One of the things that I'd want to impress upon the people that whatever East was started by kids, children, 14 to 18 years old. These weren't adults. We were kids. We were children. And I can remember us going to the African Teachers Association, and we would be in their building, and G2 said, called him Black, says, look, we need our own building. We pooled our money together. It was $22,000. Feed 16, 17-year-olds, and we put a down payment on 10 Claver Place. Maliki took us over there. And my daughter was a student at Uhuru Sasa. When I went away to college, my goal, I kept in contact with G2 on a consistent basis. And I set up East-like organizations everywhere I went. We set up one at the Wingate High School, but we were banned. We could not have an African-American Student Association. And then he called it the African Culture Society. And so we put on programs. So we were doing a dual East. We were replicating everything the East had. I felt honored, and I was just talking to Maliki, that, you know, you don't think about these things, that when I graduated, and G2 called me. He was teaching at New York Technical College. And he said, would you teach my course for me? I thought nothing of it. And then someone said, he asked you? I said, yes. So I taught his course at New York Technical College. So what happened was the work ethic, I always had a work ethic, and the spirit of Black nationalism, it was just infused and put in a great framework. And we've been carrying that on. I want to mention one sister that's not here. She's in Ghana now, Aisha. The list goes on. You know, when you were asking about Reggie Workman and Akili and all of the people that have been influenced, but thousands of students, thousands of young people. And that's what changed the Board of Education, because we had I think it was 10 demands or 12 demands that we had. We wanted Black history being taught, and we were adamant. We challenged Mayor Lindsay. We ran Mayor Lindsay out of the city, because he used to come through Bed-Stuy and, give a show of how he was with us. And we said, no, we're not going for this. We took over the Board of Education in Manhattan. The thing is, we were young kids, young children, but we were guided by G2. We call him Black. You know, we were guided by him, and not that he's telling us what to do, but we intuitively knew.
Yeah.
Look, you know, we're going to do this. We're going to set up a bookstore. We're going to set up a school. We're going to set up the festival. We're going to set up graduation, And so it was a beautiful time.
I'd like to remind you, forgot the first name. They called him Big Black because of
Big. Yeah, Big. But see, this is when in the schools called him Watusi Less. They called him what? See, we called, and I think the kids. This is before the East. I think the kids were trying to be, you know, putting him down. Say, oh, you're a big Watusi, but he didn't. You know, he didn't let that go. So he was Watusi Less. Then they called him Big Black. Then he would, then, and then we called him Black and G2. A man of Kasifi. He had a man of many names. But that was our brother. That, you know, that was our, you know, that was our main man and inspiration.
Asante, my brother. Asante for that.
Sister Yan, could I just let one break just to let our audience know that you're listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. We have a very special guest tonight. We have co-host Ms. Benicewa Ayan and Brother Maliki, and they are here with members of the East Educational and Cultural Center. These are some of the alumni. These are family members, participants in what is one of the most powerful African brain trusts anywhere on the planet Earth. And I am so proud that we are able to have them here. These are people who do not believe in turning their kids over to strangers to be educated. So they decided to start their own system. And that's who we have here tonight. And that's who you hear talking for all of those who have tuned in that are not a part of the school itself. So we thank you. We do have a call-in number if you would like to call when we open our lines. Our area code here is 215-490-9832. And I repeat. 215-490-9832. And we are broadcasting tonight on the Time for an Awakening Radio Network. Okay, Sister Yan.
Thank you. How much time do we have left?
Yes, next I want to... Was somebody saying something?
Yes, I said, how much time do we have left?
Okay, the show ends in about an hour and 15 minutes. Stop.
Yes.
So I want to get through everybody, and then we'll just flow. We'll just let it flow. We'll make sure that everyone that Maliki gave you on the list that we get to. So we'll come on back to you, brother. Calling Sister Malika Iman.
Is she related to Yusuf Iman?
His daughter.
Yes, that's the daughter.
One more time. We'll come back.
Brother Maliki, what is that last four numbers that you gave me?
For Malika?
Yes.
Those numbers are 0093, but, you know, people could be calling in on a different number also.
And that could be. Well, yeah, 0093 is not on.
Okay, but she can't hear her name if she's listening.
Yeah, they can hear, right. Yeah. And they, if they muted their mouth phone, they just need to unmute that so that...
Okay. All right, so we'll move on and we'll come back. Niambe.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, you can. Is this a Niambe?
Okay. Thank you to everyone. I'm having very wonderful memories listening to everyone, and I'd just like to thank folks for just allowing us to come on, because this is really, really something that is necessary. And I feel that this should continue to go on as far as all the things that we can remember that Brother G2 pretty much just, how can I put it? He was more than a mentor to us. You know, he was more than that. And so I'm going to just start off by saying that I met Brother G2 at junior high school 35. I was 13 years old, and he was my teacher. Yeah, he was my teacher at junior high school 35. And he followed, when I say he followed us, some kind of way he kept in touch with us, because 2 years later, my friend's sister said that he wanted to see us on Saturdays, because he was, you know, doing like a mentoring thing. And so, of course, you know, we loved him in junior high school, so we went to see what it was all about. And basically, it was about teaching us to not be involved with drugs, okay? That, I'll never forget that session. He was saying, you know, what it would do to you and how it would harm the body. And that was the first outside activity that we attended with him. But then things started to keep moving, because the next thing I knew, I was a part of the African American Students Association, which involved me going to African dance classes on the outside. And I was trying to remember my teacher's name, and Brother Maliki said, Nyambi. It was Brother Olatunji. I said, oh my God. So that was my African, that was my African teacher's, you know, dance teacher. And then that organization also allowed us to do theater classes, and that was with Brother Herb English. And then we also went on trips. You know, he introduced us, exposed us to colleges that he felt, you know, was something that we needed to start thinking about, because at this time I was 16 years old. So that was the exposure to different colleges. I mean, you know, it was upstate, Westchester County. I mean, it was just all over different schools, and these were buses that we didn't pay for. We just, I don't know where it came from. All we know, we jumped on a bus and we went to these institutions, you know, and it was great. It was great. Not only that, Huey Newton, I don't know if anyone remembers, Huey Newton spoke at LIU, which was also great for us. And Gary Bartz was a part of this program. So, you know, it didn't stop there. He went to the point of saying, you know what, I got to get a little deeper. So this part came to expanding our minds on who we were. I mean, he was giving us the culture, but it was something else that he thought that was valuable. So as Maliki was saying, the organizations of the different high schools. So I was a leader in my high school along with another sister.
No, you were the captain, sister. They had captains in the school. You were a captain.
Okay.
Under IDM, you've been Delhi.
Okay. So we you know, did what we had to do as far as informing, you know, students. But basically what I wanted to say was that the biggest demand that we had was that we wanted Black history taught in the public schools.
That's right.
That was our biggest demand, all right? And so, you know, a lot of heads got busted, arrests were done, and, you know, I got charged with some stuff. But the thing is, we had supportive parents that came through for us, and all that stuff was, you know, just, it was gone. You know, it was like it came and it just went. So that was the demonstrations that we were a part of. Afterwards, we kept moving. College was hitting us in our face. And before I knew it, we were... you know, like going to the East. You know, we were at the East. And at the East, these meetings were so informative. Meetings that where, you know, everyone came together. I mean, there was a Black Panther Party. There was Muslims. Does anybody remember all those meetings? I mean, sitting
yes.
in there, and the information was coming. You know, he was preparing us for
leadership.
The world. He was letting us know, exactly, leadership was one of the primary, I mean, like, that was one of the primary things that I think that most of us teens got out of it, all right? Because we took a heavy stand. We put ourselves on the line out there, and like I said, it was basically we wanted more, and we wanted more about us. So when we stood out there, and like I said, heads were beaten and all, arrests and all that stuff was going down, there was not a fear that said you need to stop.
Mm.
It was like something that said you got to keep moving.
That's
all right.
That's right.
So when we went to those, so when we sat at those meetings, and you had the Black Nationalists there, the Muslims were there, Black Panther Party. I mean, it goes on, Black and Puerto Rican caucus. Everybody's sitting there. I'm just this little 16-year-old listening because the leaders were much older, and we were sitting there. But see, this information was valuable because he put you in touch with all of, you know, everybody that you needed to know, they were right in front of your face.
That's
and
right.
And so we sat there and we absorbed this information. That's the reason I'm sure that everybody who's sitting out there tonight, you can relate to all of them because it was put into you when you was young.
Yes.
You know, it was already implemented. It was put into you. And so it was so easy for you to walk out into the world and not be like, I don't know about him. I don't know about her. No, you know, because it was already planted. You know, that seed was planted as a young person of how to relate. All right. So I'm going to stop there. But I just want to say at the East, I came in contact with some of the most beautiful musicians, Scobie Strowman, Roland Alexander, Gary Hart. Oh, my God. So,
Max Roach.
I feel so blessed. You know, I feel blessed.
Let me pick up on something, Cynthia. You mentioned Gary Bartz, and I must say that the seed has been planted and is spreading all over the world. And I've been contacted by the manager of Lakeisha Benjamin to come to Philadelphia. And Gary Bartz is one of the persons, along with Dee Dee Bridgewater and myself, and Lakeisha Benjamin is the young woman who's dynamite. Saxons has a great band, and at the Annenberg place in Philadelphia on the October 16th, I've been asked to come over and join that group of people spreading the same word, which we've been spreading this word all over the world for years. And, of course, Gary Bartz and Andy Fay and Freddie Waits and Sonny Fortune and Toomey. I guess you remember him, Toomey, when he did his tribute to Jimmy Heath, his father.
Yeah.
And outgrowth of that was the Strata East. And Gil Scott-Heron and all of them who got together with Sandy Cowell, et cetera, and started a record company. And all these institutions that crop up as a result of what the East implemented partially.
Yes.
Just blossomed. Yes. And spread out all over the nation. And this is what we have to keep planting these seeds and keep this type of thing going. So I'll see you on the 16th. When I come down with the Keisha. But I'm happy for this show, and I'd like to compliment the Black Talk Radio and Think Tank. Please keep it going, because we need everybody's shoulder to the wheel, especially when you turn on the news, you know what I'm talking about.
I say, excuse me, brother. Is Brother Maliki on the line?
Yes.
This is Kwame Asante.
Hey.
Barigani.
Habari, brother. Habari. Ujima.
Ujima, brother. I got a call from a brother. I saw. He told me, you need to call. He said, your people are on. He said, take this number down and call in. So I said, if they're talking about the East, I said, I got to call in.
And I mentioned you in the beginning, brother.
The ancestors are working because you spoke. It went to that brother. That brother got on the phone and called me. He said, get on the call. He said, because you always talk about you a son, S-U-N. You're one of the sons of the East. And I said, yes, sir, brother. We are still going. We are still growing, and we are still glowing because of what Baba G2 and Maliki and you and Adeyemi and so many other people instilled in us there. That was a life force. It was like the equivalent I like to use. It's like the backbone of a saw, the dedge. That's what you all put on us. You gave us a spine. It caused us to be able to stand up anywhere in the world. And I've been all over the world. And wherever I've been, I've raised up the name of Ibaye Baba G2. I'm almost crying when I mention his name.
Yeah.
But so many of us. So many of us, Ibaye would not be what we are today if it weren't for Papa Chichu, the sacrifices that he made.
Absolutely.
What he poured into our spirit.
Yes.
And it gave us the ability to confront any and everything in the world.
Yes. Everybody he touched.
That's right.
Everybody he touched, brother. And I tell his children that we were his children first before he even had.
That's right.
Yes.
Yebo. 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 Yes, my brother.
Boss. Brother Kwame, want to say anything else?
Yes, well, just that for us, it was a very critical juncture. I met them at the age of 14, a beautiful sister. She's an ancestor now, Ibaye sister, Aliyah Abdul Karim. I met her on the A train. She was on her way to work, I believe, at Junior High School 271, and I was on my way to a school out in Queens in Ozone Park called John Adams. And she approached me. I was just sitting on the train, and I was quite disillusioned. I had gone from a junior high school over in the Fort Greene section, Brooklyn. At that time, was called Sand Junior High School. Now it's soon to be McKinney High School. But I was in a science program, and I graduated honors, and I went out to high school there. And in my first year, I had a guidance counselor, a Jewish woman, Miss Israel. I'll never forget her name. She said, "You don't even know how to write a sentence. What junior high school did you come from?" So it just discombobulated me. Then we also would have, I'm sure it happened in so many, Bensonhurst and so many other high schools, when they had this, what they call open enrollment. And we went out to these different high schools, supposedly in search of a better education. And I was ready to drop out of school. I could have transferred to Boys High School at that time, but I didn't want to. And so the sister told me, she wrote down on a piece of paper, she said, "This is the name of two men I want you to go see. 1064 Clausen." She said, "Right on the corner of Fulton." She said, "Go there and go upstairs on the second floor." And she said, "There'll be two brothers there. And I want you to go there and you tell your story." And she said, "Those brothers will help you get what you need in order to stay in school." And through that was the African American Teachers Association and Baba Chichu. And then a man who I later came to find out years later, this is how the ancestors work. I was around Al Van for maybe a good 20, 25 years before one day we got into a conversation where he talked about he was going on vacation. I said, "Where you going?" He said, "I'm going to a little place." He said, "You never heard of it." I said, "Tell me, where is it?" He says, "In North Carolina." I said, "What's the name of the town?" He said, "Ahoskie, North Carolina." I said, "What?" I said, my maternal grandfather and my maternal grandmother are from Ahoskie. And then we started talking. Come to find out, I go home and speak to my grandmother, and my grandmother tells me that Van's mother is her cousin, or was her cousin, both deceased. So I got involved with the African American Student Association with, like I said, Maliki and Brother Adiemi Bendeli. And at my school, John Adams High School in Queens, I became a captain. I have an identical twin brother, Kamal. He became a captain at the FDR High School in Bensonhurst. I remember one day we had for days on it, and they would beat up the black students on the way home to the train station. That was the F train at Avenue I. It was a long walk near a cemetery, and they would ambush them. Baba Chichu and Alpha, and Al Van got together and got some other black men, and they came out to the school, and I played hooky that day. I went over to FDR to meet my brother, because my stepbrother Eugene was there too, and my sister Darrell. And Baba Chichu, through all of that, I mean, he put his life on the line. He could have been killed coming out there. He came and got us, and he told them, "This, I don't want to use profanity, but this has got to stop." And believe it or not, he didn't have any more problems. That brother let him know that, hey, we will come out here, and we won't just come out of here in body. We will have something with us that will make things very difficult for those. And this was a mob area. Now, that was Bensonhurst, a strong Italian enclave.
Oh, yeah.
He told us to keep our heads up, to walk. But he also taught us what we needed to do. Many of us went to school. Some of us had Boy Scouts. We had our little knapsacks. Man, we had our meat cleavers and other things in it. So that if we decided, he taught us how to defend ourselves. Mm-hmm. He also taught us about the beauty of our culture, our history. Like you said, those trips to those colleges and things. I remember then out of the offspring of the African American Teachers Association, they had something called Talent Search. This was a program on Bedford Avenue which helped juniors with the PSAT and then seniors with the SAT to get into colleges. I can tell you,
Randy Tobias,
tens of thousands, and Ron McFadden, tens of thousands of African American men and women who are what they are today is because of the foundation that we got at the East.
Yeah.
And as Dr. Marlana Karenga talks about, the biggest problem confronting African people today is culture. And at the East, we got a spiritual, cultural, intellectual, and historical grounding that made us stand up and become eventually leaders in our own right because of what Baba Jitu Ibaye and the others shared with us.
Yeah. Brother, I want to thank you so much. We're nearing a break time, but we have another hour, so stay on. Doc, is it break time yet?
We can. We might want to take a few questions. I don't know if that's possible.
I want to back to see if any of the two that I have listed have come on yet. I'm gonna call on Imari. Okay, Malika. Iman.
Malika's not.
Okay.
Oh, I would love to talk with her.
Well, I'm gonna give, because I'm also a former student of the East, and. Mm-hmm. I want to share my experience at the East, because as I'm this, I want to say so much, but I can't because I'm here to listen to y'all. But
share your experience, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was in Winthrop Junior High School at 12 years old, and I became a revolutionary at 10 years old when I learned about slavery. At a black teachers, and then I would go to Coney Island and come back to Bed-Stuy where I lived, and it was like two different worlds.
Mm.
And so it's about slavery, and I started connecting the dots. I said, white people doing something wrong to us. And of course, on TV, and I just started noticing that they had the upper hand and we were lower. And this was during the 60s where the junkies were, where heroin was just ravaging our community.
Yes.
So at that point, I started hating white people, and I'll say it straight out. And as a result of that, I started beating up white people, just like they were beating us up. We were beating up. And I went to Winston High School, and that was my pastime, was beating up white people to the point where I was suspended. I was suspended every week for fighting. That's how much I wanted to destroy the enemy. And so when we talk about young people, that's the revolution that we had. We were fighters.
Oh, yes.
Various ways. And so my mother and her wisdom put me in Uhuru, in the East, rather, me and my two sisters.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I became a student. And aside from learning, you know, the sciences, math, et cetera, we also learned Kiswahili.
That's right.
And we spoke Kiswahili. If you're coming from, you know, the Eurocentric schools, we learned Spanish and French and whatnot. But when I got to Urukasa, we learned Kiswahili, and we spoke. We said,
brother, we need to keep the background quiet, whoever's on.
Yeah.
People on the line need to keep the background quiet.
Yeah, I'm in a mood by myself, so I know it isn't
you,
me.
You mics, please. It's thank you so much. We love you. We spoke Swahili and during our conversations every day, so that it stuck with us. Brother said, "Yeah, yeah." He said, "Yeah, bo." That's what we learned. "Yeah, bo." Yes.
Yeah, bo. That's right.
Tutao Nana. See you later. In Dugu, Dada. Alala, when we were at those wonderful concerts and things just got fantastic. Thank you very much. Nisa Mehe, excuse me. So we use these words in our everyday language, and I'm telling you, 50 years later, these words still were in my subconscious and came right out as soon as I started talking about the East some years ago to Dr. Roger.
Yes.
We also learned martial arts. How to protect ourselves.
That's right.
I also worked in the bookstore.
Oh, okay.
The herbal store where we sold gold. I learned about golden seal, hyssop, the human herbs when I was 15 years old.
Yes.
You know, our youth marched, our class, and I'm sure other classes, we marched through the community singing our Black Power songs. Praise the red, black and the green.
The black and the green.
Mm-hmm.
I used to sing Mon song.
Malika,
somebody gave me the wrong number, 9732, and then I realized when I went on the Facebook that it's 9832. So I'm happy to have reached you guys.
This is Malika speaking there. That's Malika Iman.
All right.
But sister, we're coming to you in 1 minute. I'm going to finish on up, all right?
Sure.
And so we marched through the community singing these freedom songs, and the community had high respect and regard for us. This was Bed's time, back in the 60s and early 70s.
Oh, yes.
When I was in the presence of Jitu Weusi, I felt protected, I felt poor, and I felt like I had to do my best because that's what he expected of us.
Excellent.
And so
excellent.
I did my best, and we all did our best. And and then we were taught that one of Africa's original names was Al-Kabulon.
That's right.
And for the black man. So we started using Al-Kabulon instead of Africa. We were given African names. See, we were being recognized. That's the people I want to emphasize. We were being Africanized, not in, in every way. So my name is Kathy Johnson. I was given the name Afik, you know, spiritual thing. And it fit me perfectly. You know, it's like the ancestors were moving so powerfully because I know that when we move, the ancestors move. We also ate healthy foods. You know, the junk you eat at those public schools. Well,
that's
I remember that carrot and raisin salad and the brown rice. I mean, everything about health. And the last thing I'll mention that impacted me in a way that just was amazing. You know, growing up in the hood, you had to be tough, et cetera. You had to be gangster. When we went to the East and my first memory, Pharrell Sanders and Leon Thomas were playing. And I saw over 100 black men with tears streaming down their faces.
Yeah.
Ecstasy in the spirit that was moving through that room. They started and my line that has a master plan. It was just total black wonderfulness. And so that's the impact that the East had on me. And Dr. Rogers, you can be a witness to this. And anybody else that's on Black Reality Think Tank family, I talk about the East all the time. Now,
yes, you do.
You know why. Now you know why. I wanted to say that. Okay.
That's right.
Now,
let me say this. All of those songs you were singing were brought to the East by Yusuf Iman, Malika's father.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah, we can't wait to hear. Doctor, we want to go to
Iman
and bring her on.
Okay. Yes, we do. We want to take. You can take a quick break, and we'll come right back. This is a very, very, very powerful conversation. I thank all of you who have taken the time out to come to the Black Reality Think Tank and share these wonderful stories with us. And we're going to let you meet some of the other family members in just a minute, and they may have some questions for you as well. But again, thank you, Sister Yan. Thank you, Brother Malik. I appreciate you so much. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent Care Clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414-988-3079.
Hey.
Are you or is anyone you know suffering from the horrific effects of trauma? If so, the Little Book of Affirmations, Claim Your Narrative Over Trauma, can help you. This short ebook is a self-help tool to help you get started on the path of healing from the impacts of trauma. It is important to know that trauma is not an event. It is how your body responds to an event. School shootings, police shootings, the death of a loved one, car accident, all of these events can cause trauma in our bodies. But you can heal from it. I repeat, you can heal from it. So go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble to purchase your ebook today, and just in time for the holidays, which is a time when a lot of people are suffering. Give the gift of healing for yourself or for someone you care about. The book was written by a licensed professional counselor who specializes in trauma-informed care. Follow her on Instagram at PLT_LPC and LinkedIn at Patricia Taylor. And I repeat, Instagram at PLT_LPC and LinkedIn at Patricia Taylor.
Happiness through all the peace and happiness through
all
the lands. The Creator makes but one demand: peace and happiness through all.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Welcome back, sisters and brothers, and I'll turn it over to Sister Yan.
That there was Leon Thomas and Cheryl Sanders. Ashe, everybody.
Ashe.
Ashe, Ashe.
Yes. Oh, man.
Still here.
Okay. We have with us this evening a fantastically beautiful East family. And we're talking about the Eastern Educational and Cultural Center built in Brooklyn by and for Black people, by the youth. And I have to emphasize, the principles that the East were based on were the Nguzu Saba, Umoja, Unity, Kuzi Jakalia, self-determination. Somebody else want to take it? Ujima, collective work and responsibility.
Ujima, cooperative economics.
That's right.
Mia, purpose, mm-hmm. Kawumba, creativity, and Imani, faith.
I say. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, man. Asante, son. I'm going to start using my Kiswahili words. Asante means thank you. Asante, son, everyone that shared so far. We're calling Sister Alika, Malika, rather, Iman.
Yes. Yes, ma'am. Good evening, everyone, and Asante Sana, thank you so much for having this program in honor of the East, which was a dynamic and powerful institution at the time. When I came with my family, my father, Yusuf Iman, and Dara Iman, we came in from being at the Spirit House with the Midi Baraka. And my understanding is that Baba Jitu Weyusi had made a call to Amidi Baraka to implement the teachings of Kawaida and Kwanzaa to Uhura Sasa School. And so he sent my father, because we lived in Brooklyn, actually. We lived in Brownsville also, and was, you know, constantly commuting back and forth to New Jersey with Baraka. So he wanted us to go on and meet up with Baba G2 and to see what was going on over there at 10 Claver Place. And personally, I must say that when we got there, we all actually was so impressed with what was already going on with the brothers and sisters of my peer group who were already in some serious action activity in terms of developing the community, being pioneers in the forefront of the liberation movement. These brothers and sisters, we all were high school grade level at this time, but Baba G2 had them working and had them, you know, doing things to form the East and make that building at 10 Claver Place as effective as possible for us to do our work. And
yes.
I won't never forget how I was so impressed with the brothers and sisters there, Maliki and Adeyemi and Suleiman and Shaka and Sister Sia and Karima, and meeting all these brothers and sisters within my current peer group. We were, you know, like just really impressed and thankful that the work was the foundation, which they had as the African American Students Association, along with the great teachers that we had at Uhura Sasa, Brother Al Van and Brother Herman Ferguson and Sister Yalua and Brother Eric Frazier, and of course Baba G2 teaching history, and Brother Job Mashariki teaching politics. Mm-hmm. I mean, Brother Walter Bowe teaching us martial arts. And I think the sister before me who spoke, she really outlined everything so beautifully and given a great picture of what was going on at the East End of Uhura Sasa. But not only that, the East was, I consider it like a Brooklyn Black Renaissance, because
yes,
they had everything going on there, and it was about uplifting the community, and they opened the doors to everybody culturally, politically, academically, spiritually, went through the doors of the East, and they all contributed something from their perspective, wherever they were coming from, as long as it was positive. You know,
yes.
Everyone had something to contribute and benefit by. And that was one of the most beautiful things that I felt the East gave to the community, the diversity of the culture, the diversity of our politics and our need to be liberated on, you know, as quickly and as best that we could. And
yes,
it was a lot of work. I know we worked, you know, my father implemented the teachings of Kwanzaa and Kawayita. Kawayita means tradition and reasoning in Swahili, and the guiding principles of Kawayita, Kwanzaa principles and Guzu Saba is based upon. That's really yes, all it is. There's more that we can get into, but the primary focus in Kawayita is the principle, is the Nguza Saba. And this is what we wanted to structure our lifestyle by, which in reality are universal principles, you know, in my opinion. Anybody could be, you know, but since our focus was our people, we wanted to emphasize Umoja and self-determination. Yes. And being and collective work and responsibility and all those guiding principles for our core values within the East organization and within the school, Uhura Sasa.
Yeah, well.
So I'm just really proud of the fact that we went through those doors. My father and mother was able to contribute what they have contributed to build the East culturally and spiritually, and give the guiding principles handed down to us by the genius and brilliant mind of Malana Ron Karenga. Mm-hmm. So I remember he was playing The Creator Got the Master Plan. It brings me back to them jazz sets that the East used to have. We used to perform on those jazz sets almost every weekend.
Yes.
We brought a lot of Kawumba creativity there to the mm-hmm. East with, you know, African dance and poetry and theater. And like Maliki had just mentioned about the songs, my father did compose quite a few songs. He composed the Allegiance, the song that we sang after we would pledge allegiance to the red, black, and green. Mm-hmm. Did that, and then we had our cultural ritual songs that we sang within the sisterhood and the brotherhood meetings and things. So, you know, and the Kwanzaa songs, of course. So the creativity was strong. The Kawumba mm-hmm. creativity was strong at the East, from the kitchen, the East kitchen, with all of the beautiful dishes that they made, and that East punch was
that punch. Come on,
that East punch was that was famous. That became famous. That East punch,
right,
during the East jazz sets, which we all helped on in terms of waitressing, at least I did, and my, you know, my folks did. So, you know, it was just an honor to be able to be about building Black and building the minds of our people, raising consciousness, and doing the work that is necessary to do, that was necessary and is still necessary now, to raise the consciousness of our people and for to put us on a better pathway to be the leaders and to be the front runners in terms of turning this society around from what it is now.
Yes.
I want to ask anybody who wants to answer this. Well, actually, let me direct first to Maliki. Since you were deeply engaged with musicians, can you give our listening audience a just a short list, a taste of the musicians that came through the E, and even those that are going to become well-known and famous?
Well, one of the stories told to me is that, of course, if you look at Farrell's group coming to the East, and what people don't understand is people like Roy Ayers and all these other musicians were learning from the masters, Coltrane. So Farrell Saunders' group, first group came, you had Farrell on sax, you had Lonnie Liston Smith on piano, you had Cecil McBee on bass, you had Norman Connors on drums, okay? So that was the quartet. So now look at that quartet. Norman Connors went on to, of course, put the Gene Kahns and the Phyllis Hymans on the map. Okay? All of these musicians, what's great about jazz is that they are able to work with each other, but then they went on to create their own groups, you know?
Right.
Roy Ayers, you know, come in there. But if you look at Roy Ayers, is a prodigy of Lionel Hampton. You know what I'm saying? So all of this goes back to the root and the learning that these guys were getting in their early years. So, you know, if you go back to any one of them, you could see the association. So, of course, the great sets at the East was the Farrell Saunders, the Gary Botts, the James Spaulding, the Reggie Workmans, of course. We had Lee Morgan. We had Freddie Hubbard. We had Yusef Lateef. We had Jolie Wilson. I remember something I was discussing with Reggie is that one night Andy Bay was performing, and before the set started, he's teaching this 17-year-old boy the music, and this boy is a bass player. And I'm saying to myself, who's this 17-year-old boy that he's teaching? I ain't never heard of him. He's from Queens. Well, that 17-year-old boy was Marcus Miller, who went on to write all the new music for Miles Davis.
That's right.
Okay?
And produce Luther Vandross.
We had Lee Morgan to come and perform. His wife gave us some pots and pans to the Sweeties, the little restaurant we had. So those were the great sets. When Freddie Hubbard came, he had Carlos Garnett with him on sax, and he said, well, let me play this gig and get out of here. Well, of course, when everybody left, it was sun up. The sun would be coming up. You
Brother
know?
Maliki.
So nobody wanted, and it was great because now when they're doing concerts in other locations, they want to do these concerts and just leave and get out of there. At the East, you played, you played until the sun came up because that's how spiritual it was in the building once those doors closed and the music started. So in two of the greats, Randy Weston and Max Roach. Randy Weston and Max Roach, whenever they would perform, they were teaching, talking about community, talking about the history of the music. You never came to one of their sets when they were not talking about the music and the people and our people in the community. So those were the great times at the East. You know, those
Brother
were the great times. And of course, Norman Connors, you know, created the great, soon as Gene Kahn became just Gene Kahn by herself, Norman Connors snatched her up, put on the map with Phyllis Hyman, you know?
That's right.
And so awesome. Those are just some of the great moments of the evening.
Brother Maliki, I definitely want to ask you this question on behalf of maybe the listening audience and some of those that out who didn't know about the East and who themselves have organizations and they're trying to do some things too as well. And as we look at this blueprint that you all had, how were you able to influence people like John Coltrane and others to come forward? Because I know, you know, they were busy, they performing, traveling all over the world. And what was it that you were able to say to them? And not only
young people, the word went out like wildfire all over the music community. You got to go see what these young people are doing down here in Brooklyn. The nights, the sets would be so crowded. And see, one thing about the music, they want to come and see first. Right. So if you had Doug and Gene Kahn performing and it was so packed, we have the chairs set up in the back. Now you had Gil Scott-Heron coming to see.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Now you had all the other musicians coming just to sit and see what's going on and what these people are doing. And once they came and saw what was taking place, no alcohol, okay?
That's right.
No alcohol, good food, good spirit,
right.
Good people, good vibes. They said, we got to come and play. And most of the time, we didn't have to, there was never time we had to beg them to come and play. They would come and say, hey, what do y'all need? You know, we're here.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to come and play. Just give us a date, and then we'll work out whatever the funds were. We could work it out. So it was young people, as G2's vision was that anything that was going to take place positive in the community to change it from what it was, it had to start with young people, and that's where we began. So, and being an example. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. When you walk in the street, you can't be walking around acting crazy, cursing and carrying on. You see the lady down the street with her bags, you go help her.
Right.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's what had the impact for the community to say, hey, those people down there, they serious. They know how to help the community. They know how to help. They're responsible and they're respectful.
It was a true village.
And if I can interject, we should also recognize Olu Dara was one of the great musicians that came to the East as well, who is Nas' father.
Who is father of Nas.
Right.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. We also had Betty Carter.
That's right.
We also had institutions like Gary Bartz, who Andy Bay sprung from that group, and Toomé sprung from that group, and Hubert Eaves, who produced D-Train and wrote several songs in the R&B community, sprung from that group again. So, you know, the East was an institution, you know.
Yeah. And, of course, as you know, Toomé did his live recording there, Al Kabilon, which also featured Yusef Iman and the Welsi Kumba Troupe with Malika and them, you know.
I should also let you know that M2May actually came from Milana's organization originally, from the US organization. And then he, after he
went
left college out in California, he moved to Jersey. And of course, he was briefly around Amiri Baraka and then came. Then from there, he helped out at the East with the music. And he even conducted some workshops at the East as well.
Powerful.
And then he performed with Sonny Rollins when Sonny Rollins came. He was with Sonny Rollins' group.
Malika, you didn't mention Sonny Rollins.
Okay.
the list is so long, I'm telling you.
Sister Young.
The list is so long.
Sister Young. Sister Young.
Yes, I want to
let me just say this, please. Just let me say this, one minute. You're going to probably have to go to the audience, and I just, Brother Maliki, you know you're in trouble, right? You're going to have to come back, because it's not going to be enough time to talk about
brother,
all
this. Let him speak.
No, you're going to have to come back, so don't ease off now. You got to come back and do this
again. Let him speak.
Okay. All right, so Sister Yana, I think you're going to need to go to some of our audience. I know. I'm getting a couple of texts and all that to say, let me speak, let me talk. So go right ahead.
We're on the same page, my brother. We're on the same page, Baba. Okay. Before we do that, because there's some very critical thing issues here. The musicians, as I said, that came out of the East,
mm-hmm.
That were heavily influenced by the East, and also the organizations and the businesses that came out of the East. There's much that birthed that we want
food
our
co-op,
to know before we go to Q&A or questions and comments, rather. For instance, the food co-op, can somebody take that and just give us, just run through a quick list, because we do need to go to our audience, of some of the businesses and organizations that were birthed out of the East.
Black News, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Little Sun People.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was Mavazi, the clothing store. We had a great tailor.
Mm. Right.
That worked, that we had the storefront for Mavazi.
Correct.
Imani Daycare. That was the Imani, the nursery that we had for
that's right.
our little ones before they would attend Uhura Sasa.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we also had night classes for the community where they could take, they could get equivalencies and learn other skills to help them in life. We had we also had the restaurant that Maliki ran. Didn't you run the restaurant for a little while, Maliki?
Well, a period of time, yes.
Right. We had the restaurant. We had the newspaper. We had our own newspaper
called Black News.
And all the young people used to sell it on the street in the community.
Mm-hmm.
We started a co-east in Queens, New York, called the Far East, which, one thing about the East that, is amazing, me and some other brothers were talking about it the other day, when a G2 asks you to do something, you just did it naturally. You know what I mean? It wasn't like he pressured you because we was all about nation. You know, he said, Akili, I want you to teach. Malika, okay. Akili, I want you to go to Queens and help start the Far East. I say, Brother Adeyemi, I want you to go to Guyana.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know?
And everybody did it with no hesitation.
No attitude.
The adage was, Kazi is the blackest of all. Kazi means work.
Kazi means work, yes.
Far East is the precursor to the African Poetry Theater.
That's
just
right.
Brother John renamed the Far East. It became the African Poetry Theater. And in Brownsville, my father, it was the Mideast. We had a spot on Rockaway Avenue in the high school of Uhura Sasa was based there as well. At the Mideast on Rockaway Avenue in Brownsville.
Very quickly, we have one more minute because we want to get to...
What I want to say is that I remember when we were in high school, one Saturday, in fact, it took place more than one Saturday, Baba G2 took us over to Newark, New Jersey, and we did voter registration. And then we went back and helped, and we were responsible, along with the people at the Spirit House, Imamu Baraka, Ibaye, we were responsible for having the first black mayor elected in New Jersey, in Newark, King Gibson.
Kenneth Gibson, yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes.
And I like to also say that work that we did, the East did, and C-Fund was the organization that Imidi Baraka was the head of, spearheaded, called the Committee for Unified North. These alliances are working together like that. They did some tremendous work that we could see today, because of course, who's the mayor of Newark right now? Is Raz Baraka.
Raz Baraka.
And
our university graduate.
My understanding, he may try to build something that his father had had conceived and wanted to build called the Kawaita Towers. It's a housing development. So we pray that he'll be able to, you know, complete that project as well. There is also, I believe, already a center in the name of their late sister, Shawnee, who they lost.
Yes.
But there's a lot of great things going on over there in Newark right now.
My brother Kamal is there.
Okay. Good. Thank you so much, brothers and sisters. And my understanding, last question, then we will move to the audience, to the listening audience. Organizations that came out. I saw, as I was looking through information that Maliki sent me, I saw a number of women's organizations that came out of the East, not feminist, let me be very clear, not feminist organizations, but women's organizations.
Yes.
Anybody have anything to say about that for 1 minute?
Well, there was an East Sisterhood. I'm not sure if any names were changed after that. I know also that within the organization, following from the format of CFUN and US organization, there was the Malaikas, which were the young women, and I believe Akili Mashariki and Khadija Bendeli were trying to form the Malaikas of the young sisters that were at the East. But those who were more mature, we had the East Sisterhood, this is my understanding, and we did have a ceremony whereby, which my father conducted as a minister. The initiation of the
into the sisterhood and the brotherhood.
And the brotherhood.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And names and naming ceremonies, because
that's right.
I got my name from Baba Youssef in a naming ceremony. Yes. So. But also other schools were started from Uhuru Sasa. The teachers that went out and started. There was the school in Flatbush there that was started, and some other schools.
Al Kareem. And what's Ayana's school, Malika?
Ayana Preparatory.
UC Shule was Ayana Johnson's school.
Right.
Al Kareem.
Sister,
what's the name with Sankofa? What's the name?
And then, of course, people that exist now, Little Sun people.
Little Sun? Mm-hmm. Yes, Shule Mapinduzi. And I believe that Sister Rashida, when she left the East, she formed the school, too. I don't recall the name of it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But
okay, so we see the wonderful things that came, that the East birthed. It wasn't just stay where it was. It spread out to build Black community all over. Okay, Doc, are we ready? Again, Asante, Sana, brothers and sisters, please stay on for questions and comments. If there are any, Doc, you want to open
up
the
line? Okay, we have one caller from Grand Prairie, Texas, 8747. Ooh. Question or comment, caller? Grand Prairie, Texas?
Hello, I am just so honored to be able to sit and listen to this family reunion. I feel like I'm just eavesdropping on a family reunion that is they're talking about our history, and I love it. I appreciate you all so much for giving us your time and your stories and your history, which is our history. So thank you.
All right.
Yes,
thank
it is.
You.
You're welcome.
Thank you, my sister.
It's our history, sister. You thank said you. It. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Montgomery, Alabama. 0148, Montgomery, Alabama.
Good evening, everyone. Uhuru Sasa Shule. I want to ask, how far south had the educational philosophy and/or theory of the East migrated? And I'm talking about down in states like Louisiana, Alabama, since you mentioned Kenneth Gibson, who was from Enterprise, Alabama. How far south did we get over the past 50 years?
Oh, well, there's a school that still exists
in Washington, D.C. And that's based on the Guzu Saba. That's one of the first institutions that started with the philosophy of the Guzu Saba. Malika, do you remember the name of that school?
In Washington, D.C.? I don't recall.
Well, you have the Freedom School, but Dr. Greg Carr from Howard University, which they run every summer, that was he always honors and pays homage to Baba G, too. He raises him up all the time.
Okay. Well, and you know, as it grew, because Kwanzaa grew, it was the East that was one of the primary institutions that pioneered Kwanzaa. And so, like I said, the guiding principles of Kwanzaa is the Nguzu Saba. And when this was adopted, that's when a lot of Black institutions started really building and developing, whether they were schools, whether they were businesses, or whatever. But it was the implementation and philosophy of Kwanzaa and Kawahita that really spread, and then it inspired and motivated people to do what one of the principles is about, Kujijakalia, self-determination, for us to start building our own businesses and schools as we should.
And connecting with Don Lee, Mahabuti,
Chicago.
Chicago. So the word went out like wildfire, and you had different people coming from all the cities, Detroit, Chicago, everywhere, to come and see what the East was doing. And so therefore they took it back, and they started implementing Nguzu Saba. So Sister Bernice was down in Greensboro. I was down in Greensboro.
That's right.
So it just carried on and on, brother. It just went on. I couldn't say how far, because the fall would be the end of the earth. But
let's go to
It was in Guyana. You know, we were in Guyana. We were in South America. We took we took a show to Bermuda. We were we had people. So we had sisters from Trinidad, and we went to Trinidad. So it was all over the globe, brother. All over the globe.
That's right.
Okay, let's go to Durham, North. Let's go to Durham, North Carolina. Let me get to another call. We got about 10 minutes, and I just got to. I want to pick up two or three more people, if we could. Let's go to Durham, North Carolina. Go ahead, brother. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was saying for you to go ahead.
Okay. All right.
No, I was saying that when many of the students left the East, we went to various colleges, especially the Black Historical Colleges, and we established Black student unions all over the country.
Wow.
Yes.
That's because of the leadership and the teaching, the spiritual, cultural, and historical, intellectual training that we got.
Who is speaking now?
This is Baba Kwame, Kwame Asante.
Oh, Kwame, okay.
We went to various colleges. We established many campuses. Much of what was done with the Black student movement, many people at the core of those movements came out of the East.
Thank
you for that, brother. Dr. Rogers, do you want to get to another call?
Okay, Durham, North Carolina, 8502.
Good evening, Dr. Rogers, and to all your esteemed guests on the show.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I just want to say thank you for all of this information. I live in Durham, North Carolina, but I grew up in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay.
I went to junior high school 35.
Whoa. Okay.
In 1957. I went there the year after that girl was stabbed to death. There was absolutely nothing going on in school as far as culture is concerned at that time. You know, as a matter of fact, it was an insult to be called an African.
Yeah, that's true.
I went there for 3 years, and I majored in clowning around.
Wow.
And when I left, that's all I knew how to do.
Right.
Mm.
Wow. Look at the difference between an African education and Eurocentric.
That's right.
And I just want to ask any of the people that's on the show, a few years later in 1971, 72, I worked in junior high school 57, and we had a principal came over there, Sheldon Roach.
Mm. Oh, I remember Sheldon Roach. I remember.
Yeah. And he turned that school on its head.
Yep.
And the teachers union, Albert Shank and them, they got rid of him that next year. He changed that school from white to black overnight. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. He took down every picture, every white person in that school. And put up pictures of black people.
All right.
Yeah, he used to have jazz concerts after school in the evenings on the weekend. He wouldn't let none of the white teachers come.
Whoa.
He would be a word of mouth, and people would be coming up to the school and ring the bell, and they would let them in, and then one of the white teachers that found out would come, and they would say, "What you want? Ain't nobody in here."
Right. Okay, let me go over to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 0012.
Brother Timothy, here.
Hello, Philadelphia, 0012.
Brother Timothy's here.
Oh, yes. Yeah, how you
he
doing?
He's here.
Okay.
Yes. I like what you folks are saying, Benisla. I see what you come from. You're a beautiful woman with a beautiful voice. And I want to relate, and I relate to everything you're saying. Fran Rosandres, wow. Lee Morton from Philly, wow. Listen to me. Right. Coltrane from whose house is still in North Philadelphia?
Right.
Wow. You know, this is my education comes from the Nation of Islam. Temple number 12. Mm. I ain't gonna tell you about my other education, but the 5%ers jumping on the train, riding the G train, the A train, and doing a university rally.
Come on.
With the 5%ers.
Come on, brother.
With the 5%ers. Now listen to me. And then leaving and going to the brick city over Mary Barack South. Anybody know about North? That's called the brick city.
Yeah, brick city. Yeah, my brother lives there. Yes, sir.
Yes. Let me tell you something. I'm enjoying your family. Your family's a part of our family now, Benice.
Yeah.
And they always were.
Right.
Always were.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Brother, you're from Philadelphia?
Philadelphia. Temple number 12, brother, from South Philadelphia, so right now living.
You know about people like Benny Golson? You know about the Heath brothers, right?
I know, they sure. All came out Heath, sure. Yes, I do. Philly Joe
Heath
Jones.
Brothers.
Yeah.
That's right. Philly Joe. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's right. And Lee lived in Philly also.
Who? Lee Morgan. That's right.
Yeah, Lee Morgan. Oh, man. Lee Morgan. Oh, sure. Are you kidding me?
Don't forget Reggie.
He was there for a while.
Wait a minute. Okay. I'm going to tell you who this
is.
He does. I lived around the corner from Sun Ra. And Alan Marshall is carrying on the group right now.
Brothers and sisters, let me go over to one other caller. This is Durham, North Carolina. It says unknown caller. Is that you, Dr. Bridges? Dr. Bridges, is that you, that unknown caller?
Dr. Bruce Bridges?
Yeah, Bruce Bridges. Yeah, Dr. Bridges? Maybe not. Okay. I've got a Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 1295.
Wow.
Milwaukee? 1295. You have a comment, question? Okay. I think one last
Dr.
one.
Dr. Robbs, can I say one more person?
No, let me get more caller, brother, because we right at the last minute, okay? Brother Kwasi, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Hey, Doc Rogers, and thank you, Sister Benicio, and the whole family. Beautiful conversation. I'm just learning so much, and keep going. I want to know more about the community for on-field glowing. Glory. I heard that early, and that just stuck with me. But so many other things. So thank you. Keep going, please.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Brother Kwasi. Nuba, North Carolina, 5347.
Woo, Nuba.
Newborn.
Hey, man, I just want to be able to contact you guys. Hello to everybody.
Hello, my good brother.
I'd like to keep
I'd like to know about more of this.
Okay, now, Brother Malik, you heard him, don't you? You heard him, right, Brother Malik?
Man,
Can I say one thing, Doc? Can I say one thing, Doc?
Yes, go.
Before we cut off? Sam Reed and the Sam Reed.
Well, I think this brother was finishing up what he was saying, then you can go next.
Okay.
Brother Newman, from Newman?
Yeah, just please open up the lines of communication so brothers like me in these grassroots areas can touch bases with these people because there's so much more knowledge that we'd love to have. That's all I got to say. Keep on going.
Yeah, all right. I see.
Good. Brother Timmy?
I say. I sound.
Brother Timothy?
Yes, I want to mention two people, sir. Two of them are dead. Matter of fact, I went to their funeral. One was in the morning, one was in the afternoon. They have Sam Reed and the Sam Reed Orchestra and Nate Murray, the bass player. Household bands. Now, you got to remember that Sam Reed was the band leader of the Uptown.
Oh, the Uptown. I went there, yes.
Uptown, Sam Reed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you, brother. Next, Doc.
Well, that's it. That's. I think we've made the rounds. You could now.
Okay. I don't want to be for the rules, but we try to get to any callers that came in.
Let me ask you. I did want to ask this one last question. If somebody could address what happened to the East and why did it close?
I want to say something before that goes. Okay. There's a book that they wrote. It's called Young Activists. American high school students in the age of protest. Her name is Gail Graham, and she outlines what was happening throughout the schools in New York. And she mentioned school, Wingate, all of these other, Bushwick. So, and a lot of the
How do you spell her last name?
Graham, G-R-H-A-M, Gail Graham. It's Young Activist.
Gail Graham.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying that these students are so organized that one of the principals at Wingate said they're conducting psychological warfare against us.
Whoa. Mm. Mm. Wow.
You said
Bushwick High School, right? You said Bushwick was a she mentioned Bushwick?
Yes, she mentioned all of them.
That was my school, high school.
Yeah.
You went to school with my sister-in-law, Jeanette. Name was Jeanette Melton.
Yes, that was my partner.
That's Nyambe that's talking. That's Nyambe.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's my sister-in-law. She married my stepbrother, Eugene Carroll.
Eugene Carroll, yes.
Well,
yes.
Nyambe is friends with Jeanette.
Yeah,
we're close friends. Yeah, because both of us, we went to junior high school 35. That's where, we met G2. And kept following him. Like I said, we kept following him. But, Jeanette was my partner at Bushwick High School. And the day that we had to do our thing, I felt like we was in a lot of trouble. And then I just want to say, Maliki, I told you this before, and I'm going to tell you again in front of the family. You just don't know what you did that day because Jeanette and I were in some serious problems, right? So when I saw you walking with that big fro and all your soldiers,
come on!
I don't know how many. It seemed like y'all took up the whole street. And when I went over to you, I don't even know if you remember. I said, Maliki, how did you know? And you said, I didn't know. I just thought y'all might need us. Do you remember Maliki?
Vaguely, and Hodari was with me, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was the whole, y'all took up the whole block. And when I ran to you, and I was, it was like, because I was telling the students to go home, and they wouldn't go home, and someone threw an egg, at the cops. And when they threw that egg, they went crazy on us. So when I saw you coming, and it was like, oh, my God, I just ran to you, and I just, how did you know? And you said, I didn't know. I just thought y'all might need help. Because we were two sisters. We didn't have any brothers to back us up.
So when I saw y'all, nothing but brothers. That's all it was, nothing but brothers. And whew, that was just such a blessing to see Maliki. And he was walking so strong as a leader. He was in front. And all his soldiers, you know, they were just, wherever Maliki goes, I'm with them. You know, that was the type of spirit that was out there that day.
Maliki, just to expound on that a little bit, the way we were organized is anything that would happen at a school and the students would come and tell us we need help or whatever. For instance,
that's right.
What they were doing is they were suspending students rapidly. So they would say, well, down in Franklin K. Lane, they suspended so-and-so. So you know what we would do? We would take our school where we was at. We hit the fire alarm. Everybody come outside. We say, okay, now we're going down to Franklin K. Lane. So now when they see these hundreds of students coming, they're like, you better reinstate this student.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Hello? No, that's real talk.
There you go.
Robert T. taught us how to protect.
So that's organized. We were organized. That's what it was all
right.
about.
Yeah.
Wherever we found you needed help in your school, we were coming there. We're going to come
there.
Right. We just take a whole school down there. Okay?
Yeah.
Not 50 students. We take the we ring the fire alarm, let everybody come out, and this is where we're going today.
Come on.
To help.
This is revolutionary activity that is so critical that our people need to hear. It's almost time for the show to end, but Doc, to your question of what happened to the E,
I could reflect on that.
Before you do that, sis, I would actually like to suggest that we have another show about what happened to the East and other nationalist organizations, because around the same time, they all started having issues. And there was, I'm sure there were several factors. I know that G2 wrote something about Reaganomics and some other things that interfered, you know, with the process. But that's something that needs to be examined.
I like that.
Because everything ever built has been shut down in one way or another. Okay, sister, what were you saying?
Yeah, let's do that.
I'm just going to share what G2 had shared with us. First of all, the East officially closed in September of 85, and he outlined three major reasons why the East went into demise. One was that there was change in priorities and values of the African American community in the 1980s that had our people favoring individual growth and progress as opposed to a more collective. Then number two is economics. The economic, they called it stagflation, that brought about rise in prices for everything, while our community experienced raising unemployment. We had to maintain expenses, but we couldn't. They had to raise tuition, like for $500 a child, and that was an issue because there was rising unemployment going on. And finally, the third component was that there was a failure to plan for the economic hard times.
Right.
We wasn't ready. We didn't prepare as effectively as we should when Reaganomics, when Reagan and Bush administration came in, and they took away like $30 billion in federal and state funding during those years. And if we had better prepared for that, it probably would still be in existence today.
I can understand.
Okay. I can see. I want to give a shout out to Maliki. I'm sorry, I wrote the wrong number down, but I want to show you. Maliki has a book. She writes a book about her family. Yusef Iman. Yusef Iman was a Hollywood actor. You know, I forget, was it Man with the Golden Arm or Race? Which one was he in? Sister.
He was in A Man Called Adam.
A Man Called Adam.
He was very selective about the roles that he played.
Right.
So he did not. He wasn't one to be a Hollywood celebrity or anything like that, because
of his certain values that we had, and he stood by them. So he mainly did stage work, stage theater work, working with, after he left Amiri Baraka, he formed his own group, of course, the Wayusi Kuwumba Troupe Theater Group, and he worked with Woody King, New Federal Theater.
That's
he
right.
worked with Roger Furman, the New Heritage Theater, and other people that he worked with. And he was affiliated with the Black Theater Alliance, which is no longer in existence, but should be. It's under another name right now. But yes, he was definitely in the art as a teacher.
Dr. Roger?
Yeah, it's 9 o'clock. We need to close
it out. Yeah, I'm sorry to interject, but we're trying to keep in, you know, respect of the time. It is 10 o'clock, Dr. Rogers?
No, it is 9. Yeah. We've got to shut it off.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to thank Dr. Rogers.
Go right ahead, Sister Young.
Okay. Thanks to Dr. Rogers for... producing this and inviting us to do this. Thanks for everyone that contributed and participated. And the struggle continues. Let's continue to move forward and have a part two. We couldn't get it all in.
Aluta Continua.
Yeah, I wanted to say also, if people want to learn more about the East, we did a book tour, Malika, Kimba, and I, who were students at the East. And the book, you can find it on YouTube, Uhuru Sasa Book Tour. And actually did it right there in Philadelphia. This was filmed. So you can learn more about the East and Uhuru Sasa Book Tour.
Very good.
Niguzu Saba, there's no I in that. It's only we. That's all in that. Only we. There's no I for individualism. We have to do this.
Okay, all right, that's it.
We say Tutau Nana and
Asana.
Waheri.
All right, happy Kwanzaa, family.
Same to you.
Well, it's cool.